Get ready to listen, learn, and earn CE hours. This podcast features content from an accredited CE activity provided by Calibri Healthcare. Visit elitelearning.com/podcasts for accreditation and disclosure statements and instructions on how you may be able to earn CE credits.
Welcome to episode 2 of our series on patient first language. With me to continue this discussion is Dr. Mariah Ward. Dr. Ward, thank you for continuing this discussion with me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to be here.
To our listeners, if you have not already, I really encourage you to listen to episode 1 of the series. Dr. Ward really walks us through the history and the origins of patient first language. And so for our focus for this episode is going to be application and how we can improve that patient-provider relationship while also communicating medical specifics in a really respectful way. So I really want to start our discussion around cultural competence. Does cultural competence play a role in using person-first language and in how we adapt communication to these diverse backgrounds of people that we take care of? And if it does, how?
Yeah, absolutely. Cultural competence plays a role in almost everything we do, right? There's a reason that it's integrated in almost every single one of our courses in nursing. It's important because, you know, it's about respecting preferences, right? Different cultures and communities have varying preferences for how they want to be referred to, especially regarding their health conditions. So cultural competence involves understanding and respecting these differences. Also, you know, different cultures have different amounts of stigma associated with particular diagnoses or conditions. And so it's really important to kind of understand where that individual may be coming from when you say something like, oh, I think you have depression. You know, there's a lot of cultural stigma that comes along with that. And then sensitivity and awareness, right? So being culturally competent knows how language, terminology, and even person first versus identity first can be perceived against differently across cultures. And so if you say to someone, thinking about like an experience I've had, I had an African-American patient, older, probably in her 80s or 90s, and just some of the stuff that she was saying was like, this is depression. But immediately her family were like, oh, she's not depressed. Like, she doesn't want to kill herself. And it's like, so even just the word, right, the condition instills this like sense of stigma of like her family immediately jumped to suicidal ideation. Well, it's not always suicidal ideation that's prominent
right.
And depression. You know, she was saying, oh, I don't want to wake up. Like, I go to sleep and I don't want to wake up. And I was like, well, that's a touch, and so just even changing that language of saying, okay, depression is a condition that has multiple factors. It's not just suicide. And so, you know, it's a lot of the times cultural expectations are already strongly embedted and may even like negate treatment efforts and stuff. So just picking away at that is really helpful to know. Like, so as soon as they like jumped to that, I was like, okay, let me rewind and kind of define what I think depression is and what I'm kind of referencing in that situation. And they were more apt to get treated at that point. So it's really important to be culturally aware. And especially even if you like go to say something, right, and you see immediately that the response, just navigating that, knowing, okay, let me rewind and touch base back on what actually is being feared here, what's actually being said by this person when they're communicating this like fear and adamant that this is not what's going on. So what are they communicating to me?
And I can see too, I lived in Japan for a few years, and how we look at different medical conditions versus how other cultures look at medical conditions is not the same. And it's really hard to navigate that. Would you say that a way to help navigate cultural competence in how we talk would be to know your community, to become familiar with your community?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, like you said, if I'm in Japan practicing, I'm going to be doing a totally different thing than if I'm in Mexico practicing. And, you know, different cultures have different ideas, especially surrounding mental health. That's a big deal. Mental health is got a lot of lot of stigmas. And when you tell somebody like they have a mental health condition, certain cultures think that you're possessed by demons, right? So they're going to start doing a totally different thing, or thinking about how we, you know, not just how the we treat them as healthcare providers, but how do their community treat that? Like if somebody is told that they have depression, like their culture is that they believe that they've got to be like put on an island by themselves, and then they got to do so that like giving them that diagnosis is then going to, you know, is going to kind of snowball into other things within their community. So we got to also think about being culturally competent in terms of knowing your community is what, not just what is the reaction going to be to you, but what is the reaction once they go home and they tell their loved ones and their support system that maybe this is something that they have. And so it kind of gives you an idea too of like how the community is going to respond to somebody having this and stuff like that. So it's very important to kind of know your community. And sometimes you're going to be exposed still to people that are in your community that you're like, I have no idea. But the best, you know, way to do that is really just to be, you know, direct and ask and talk, be candid, but, you know, also kind of try and learn how to navigate that in real time, which, you know, comes with time and practice. You know, as a new grad, you're probably going to struggle a little with that. But, you know, 10 years into the game, you're probably going to be a little better at navigating it in real time.
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah.
So how can we balance, healthcare providers balance the respectful language, but also like really clearly communicating medical specifics?
Yeah, I think having an open dialogue, so asking the patient directly, what do they prefer? You know, this fosters collaboration and ensures that we're respecting their wishes. You want to combine approaches. So person-first language can be used in most communication, but you want to utilize precise medical terms when you're it's necessary for clarity in diagnosis and treatment discussions. So that may be in charting, that may be in conversations that you have with other healthcare providers. Also, explain when necessary. So if you're using condition-first terminology, maybe explaining why, what's the medical context, you know, briefly explain why you're using it that way. This shows that you're aware that the patient may have a response to it, but you're also ensuring to them that you want to communicate accurately. And this really fosters like a sense of rapport and trustworthiness when you're actively explaining kind of what am I going to do? Why am I doing it this way? When you emphasize collaboration, so like, let's talk about how to manage your condition. So it again focuses and respects the individual and also kind of like focuses on their perspective and their involvement in their own care. And obviously, I think as a perpetual learner, you know, staying informed about evolving language preferences and best practices, like that is the key to maintaining cultural competence. And maintaining that connection with your patients is just being open to learning and kind of like what we're doing here, you know, talking about it and engaging in education that focuses on that so that we can really emphasize the, you know, the benefits of this person first language, you know,
for
just
sure.
So ongoing education is the big one.
So when we were talking in episode one of my takeaways was that patient-first language, it really contributes to effective and compassionate care for our patients. So as a nurse listening to this podcast, what is important to know about the nurse's role in patient communication?
Yeah, so I think your choice of language really impacts how patients feel seen, respected, and empowered in their care. It's also a powerful tool to reduce stigma and build trust, right, and rapport, like I kind of mentioned. And also when you stay informed about these respectful communication practices, it includes that you're being attentive to cultural nuances. And it's a crucial part of knowing patient-centered care, right? So person-first language is such a integral part of patient-centered care. And we all have heard patient-centered care because that's really where our healthcare model is going in terms of reimbursement and payment. And so patient-first language is that one of those key features of patient-centered care. And so kind of just knowing, you know, how to navigate that is going to be essential to kind of emphasizing that patient-centered, patient-focused care.
Sure. What advice do you have for all healthcare workers who are trying to use language sensitively when they're interacting with patients?
Yeah, so I think you should prioritize the person. So you want to remember the person behind the diagnosis and try to use person first language as the default. You want to ask and listen. So don't assume somebody's preferences. Inquire about how they want to be referred to regarding their condition. You want to avoid judgment, right? So being mindful of terms with negative connotations and blame, like addict or junkie. And you want to focus on neutral descriptive language that fosters collaboration. So really mm-hmm. just kind of saying a person with diabetes. So you're kind of just the person's there and the condition's there. And you want to stay aware. So you want to commit to ongoing learning about inclusive language practices and recognize that this is going to evolve, and cultural sensitivity and cultural competence is essential in order to really navigate this, you know, with other people in your community.
Can you take this a step further and not just about like medical specifics, but can you talk a little bit about, I'm throwing you in the spot here, it's kind of a rabbit hole, and it was going back to like when we give report about somebody and we label patients, we label them combative or annoying, or can you talk a little bit about how using that language really affects the care that a patient could receive?
Yeah, I think that when we label a patient, we are, then there is going to be implicit and explicit bias that we're then going to demonstrate. So I think about oftentimes, I worked on a pulmonary unit as an RN before I became a family nurse practitioner, and we would often get patients who had substance use disorder. And the way they were kind of communicated about is like, well, this is an active addict. They're in their 20s and they're non-compliant. They're really, you know, challenging to deal with, and they've got vegetation on their heart, right? So it reduces the amount of, I feel like it reduces the amount of compassion that we have for that individual. You know, to be honest, it's kind of challenging to go into a patient's room when the way they're described is just like addict is not, it is not a good word, right? It's not a positive thing. Whereas substance use disorder is kind of neutral, right? It's like, okay, well, this person has this condition, and you know, I feel like, especially from, you know, our perspective as caregivers, like maybe we're less likely to go in there. We're less likely to have compassion and understanding and patience, right? So if I'm, you know, when I don't have that stigmatizing language, I have more patience with the person because I have more empathy and understanding for them. And I think that when we use words like non-compliant and stuff like that, where, you know, and we were talking about this in the first episode, where it's like that really kind of like, it makes me not want to interact with them. It makes me not want to talk to them about what's actually causing them to be non-compliant. So instead of saying this patient is non-compliant or non-adherence, like, well, they have difficulty accessing their treatment plan. Well, okay, well, why? It's like, oh, I can't afford my medicine. That's not non-compliant. Yeah. You know, that's a very different situation than non-compliance. Non-compliance is I've got the pill bottle in front of me and I just refuse to take it. And granted, we still don't want to call somebody non-compliant in that sense, but that's what non-compliance is. And so when somebody uses that word, you know, we already have that instant thought of, okay, this person has the medicine and just doesn't want to take it, instead of saying things like, this patient's unable to access their meds. And it's like, oh, well, that's actually different. And we can get you signed up with this program and all of that stuff. So it leads to more empathy and understanding and empowerment too on the provider's part. So, you know, like if somebody's like, I just can't access my medicine, we're more likely to give them resources in the community to kind of advocate for them to be able to access it. And then it's like, then when you look at it and the non-compliance rates are lower, you're like, oh, well, this isn't them. This is an access issue, or, you know, so again, broadens our empathy and understanding. Use person first language over using condition first language. I think we just lack compassion and empathy and understanding. And not everybody, but the majority of it.
But I've also seen how when we, as the nurse, we label that patient with something like that, it continues to follow them through every report, you know, until they get discharged. And it does start to affect the care that they receive on that floor because they can't shake that label. And maybe they were just having a bad day.
Yeah, absolutely. And we all have bad days. So you want to treat people like you want to be treated.
Absolutely. And you're really, you started touching on it, but you know, how is that person first terminology it really improve that patient-provider relationship and that quality of care. Can you kind of go a little bit deeper into that?
Yeah, so I think it helps build trust and respect, right? So patient-first language shows that that you see them as a whole person, not just their illness or whatever particular adjective that you're using. And it fosters trust and a sense of respect, which is really crucial for a patient-provider relationship. It improves communication. So patients who feel respected are likelier to be open and honest about their experiences and concerns. This leads to better communication, which is essential for accurate diagnosing and effective treatment planning. It also empowers the patient. So it focuses from deficits to strengths and empowers patients to participate actively in their care, improving adherence to treatment plans and ultimately better health outcomes. And it reduces stigma. So it helps eliminate that harmful stigma surrounding various medical conditions. And it creates this more welcoming and compassionate healthcare environment, which just encourages people to seek care without that fear of judgment or misunderstanding, right? So I think when we use patient first language, it instills this sense of understanding, which just is the foundation to a good provider-patient relationship.
Right, absolutely. I remember when I was at I went to a doctor's office and I said that my stomach was hurting and I was labeled, my labels were female, military spouse, young. And so I was told that I needed to go see mental health for anxiety. And so they didn't check why my stomach was hurting and actually ended up in the ER the following weekend with a severe infection. And so I can definitely see how some of those labels affect the care that we receive, where I was automatically like, oh, she's female. She's just anxious. Her husband's gone. She's young. Can you provide examples of how first person language really helps in healthcare scenarios? You know, I wonder how I could have gotten through to the doctor to say, no, there really was something wrong with my stomach.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of like medical charting, instead of saying non-compliant diabetic patient, maybe saying patient with diabetes who having difficulty managing blood sugar levels. You and I talked about this, especially in the first, and we've kind of hit on it in the second episode, where it kind of emphasizes that the difficulty may not actually be on the patient, right? So maybe it's, again, going back to, is the meds accessible? Is the treatment accessible? So it kind of like emphasizes that there may be another reason that's not patient fueled that may be causing some issues, right? In terms of patient interactions, instead of saying, are you taking your meds? You can say, how are you doing managing your medication schedule? You know, sometimes it's like, well, you know, I skip my lunch dose because I've got to take medicine 5 times a day. And so I just end up skipping that. Well, then it helps you create and curate a treatment plan that's more accurate and helpful for the patient, especially once they're discharged from the hospital or once they're out in the outpatient setting. When you know they're not going to take that morning or that, you know, second dose of that medication, maybe you can find a way to navigate it so that they still get what they need without that maybe the burden. And, you know, I think that says a lot about how we care for the patient. And again, it kind of gives us more sympathy and empathy for them. And, you know, context matters. So there are times where you're going to say a condition first and like I mentioned earlier, just making sure that the patient understands that there will be times where you use patient or condition first language and that if they need clarity on why you're using it at that time, just to give you a heads up and you can absolutely explain it and giving them that sense of ease while also kind of still promoting the benefits of, you know, patient first language.
Absolutely. And I see person first language as being more than just being about a disease process, but also being about the labels that we give our patients, as we've kind of talked about before, you know, and like I mentioned, the label of being a female, the label of being young, the label of, you know, you were talking about drugs. How can we move away from the labels?
Yeah.
And how do we advocate for that?
Yeah. I think it kind of depends. You know, in terms of healthcare organizations, you want to like have a lot of clear policies that kind of promotes using patient first language and all patient interactions, documentation, and educational materials. You want to provide the rationale for that and clear examples. You want to do ongoing training and education. So you want to provide staff with regular training on person first language, focusing on like why it matters, how to use it effectively, how to navigate nuanced situations, and, you know, addressing the evolution of language and respect for the individual preference. You know, that's really important. You want to incorporate it into your system. So if your standard forms, templates, and EMRs don't encourage first person first language, we're less likely to adapt that technology into, or that you know, process into our practice. And, you know, holding people accountable and giving feedback. So establishing mechanisms for patients to provide feedback on language that they experience, and offering non-punitive guidance to staff if they disrespectful language is noted. So just even like small corrections from the individual level, like being like, you know, challenging that person. Well, this person's not compliant. Well, why are they not compliant? Well, I don't know. Like they're just being, it's like, well, challenging them kind of helps that to move forward and everything. And, you know, there are other things too, you know, where we have to start with our training programs too. So, you know, how do we integrate that into our curriculum? You want to make it a foundational element of communication courses. And do we even have communication courses in our training programs, right?
I don't know.
Yeah. So such a huge, such a integral part of, not just nursing, but all medical field is communication, but we don't really learn how to communicate well, at least in my experience. And, you know, so doing that, you know, starting there, and, you know, emphasizing the impact. So how does it impact a patient's experience, stigma, healthcare outcomes? You want to do simulations, right? And role play. Mm-hmm. So offer opportunities for students and for active RNs and nurses to practice person-face communication, because that's going to be how we get comfortable with it, right? And then also, you know, collaborating interdisciplinary teams, you know, including perspectives from disability advocates, you know, including your patients in that communication efforts, you know, those are going to be really key ways that we do it. It's going to be kind of hard, but, you know, emphasizing how and why, you know, saying this is how we're going to do it, but this is why we're doing it, and kind of really having real life experience kind of tied into that, I think, is such a huge component of it. And, you know, just knowing that like that shift in language can change an entire patient's outcome is really like a crucial aspect of kind of how we focus on patient first language.
Absolutely. So when I think of person first language, it really ties into it being a part of cultural competency. It ties into also that implicit and explicit biases, you know, understanding what your biases are, because person first language is also going to play into that. It's going to play into how we treat our patients. It's going to play into the treatment plan, which is also going to be where we get our patient outcomes. So it really all ties together and is, you know, it was very intricate into each other. So as we come to the end of our series, Mariah, what would you like to emphasize or leave our listeners with to think about when it comes to patient first language?
Yeah, I think just the shift in emphasizing the person first and saying this person is experiencing difficulties, or this person has, you know, diabetes. It kind of emphasizes that there still is a person. You know, sometimes we can really get stuck in treating individuals as a cluster, right? If you work on a neurology unit, you're gonna be dealing with stroke patients, right? So remembering that this is a person who had a stroke can help you kind of break up that monotony of your work and kind of change to like the approach that you take. Not every patient's going to be ready to walk by day two, right? So making sure that we understand that, treating it kind of like we do children. Like, I know that sounds wild, but, you know, not all children at two can say four words, and that's okay. There are going to be other, and we give them the tools, right? So if you go and you see your pediatrician and your kid isn't saying the number of words that they're supposed to, we're going to give them the resources to get that. So I think it's really crucial to kind of treat it like that, right? Is that everybody has different needs. And yes, most two-year-olds should be doing this. So most patients who have diabetes should be compliant with medications. But why aren't they compliant? So we really look at the why and break down those barriers and stigmas. And I think that's really just, that's how we really start and kind of utilize patient first language, is just understanding that not everybody is going to be the same, and treating them like an individual is crucial.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. This has been a really great discussion. Through our conversation today, I made a note of three things that really stood out to me specifically about the use of person first language. And the first one was, it can enhance patient satisfaction. Number two is, it can improve trust. And number three was, when used compassionately, it can really promote a better patient-provider relationship. Would you say that those are kind of the top three things that come out of person first language?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And especially the outcomes, you want to highlight that, because unfortunately, that's how we're driven by reimbursement, right? And payment. And that's how we have jobs as nurses, is that we patient outcomes drive it. It's a yeah. huge driver. Better patient outcomes don't just benefit patients, they do benefit us too, you know, and it highlights, you know, the uniqueness of being a nurse. Like, we are so exposed to their to the everyday interactions with patients that, you know, we are an integral part in shifting patient outcomes. And if we can do that by just changing a little bit of our language, that's amazing.
Thank you, Mariah, for spending time with me on this topic and sharing so much insight into patient first language. For our listeners, I encourage you to explore many of the courses that we have available on elitelearning.com to help you grow in your careers and earn CEs.
This podcast featured content from an accredited CE activity provided by Calibri Healthcare. Visit elitelearning.com/podcasts for accreditation and disclosure statements and instructions on how you may be able to earn CE credits. Take your learning to the next level by subscribing to more podcasts on compelling healthcare topics. Thank you.